All right, here we go. Overdrive off and running. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Dave Festruck of the Toronto Star. Noodles calling another game tonight. O's off this week. So it's just a two-pack this afternoon, Dave, and there's a lot to get into this afternoon, like there usually is. And Nick Foligno will join us in about 25 minutes, and he's living that quarantine lifestyle as we speak. I remember we had Eric Stahl on a couple of weeks ago and asked him that question. What is life like in quarantine? A city that Foligno is familiar with, but it's got to be strange. And we'll get to the bottom of that in 25 minutes, and I guess they probably could have used him last night.
Probably could have used Nick Foligno, and I saw him, you know, tweet out that he was leaving his family and packing up his truck, and I would assume driving up here, but it's only about 7 hours, but maybe he flew, I'm not sure, but he had the Leafs bag in the back, and he was ready to roll. You gotta love it, man.
Yeah, I get the impression. We'll ask him in about 25 minutes. He's got three young kids. I think they're in school down there too. I think a big part of it is school. But I think with everything that's going on in Ontario right now, you know, it's kind of a tough thing to accept. But we're dealing with COVID on a bit of a different level than other places down in the States are. You know, for about a year now, we could look down in the States and say, wow, you guys are really out of control. And now we're dealing with a very different position, including the Marlies being shut down today based on COVID concerns and an abundance of caution. But you got that scenario. William Nylander has not played in a few games because he was in close contact, but by all accounts continues to test negative, but he's going to be out for a week. And it does kind of feel like COVID is kind of lurking here around the Leafs a little bit. And
it does.
It's concerning. It's concerning. You knock on wood for every team, clearly, and for health and safety and all that stuff. But who would have thunk at the start of the year that by the end of the year with 12, 13 games left, you'd still be this concerned about COVID protocols and what could happen?
Yeah, it's amazing how we were always so optimistic, eh? Like we've always been optimistic going through this thing, thinking, well, you know, in 6 months, surely things will be better. And then, you know, 6 months passed, nothing's really better. Well, in six more months, things will definitely be better. 6 more months have passed, and they're definitely not better.
No.
But you're right, man. Like, if you're Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas, like, can you imagine, you know, the jolt you get when you hear the Marlies have got a COVID issue and they're shutting down, or William Nylander the other night can't play because he's been shut down with a COVID close contact. You think about what's happened to the Canucks, man, and they're out of it. But to have one guy or one individual, you know, when they look back at the contact tracing, that essentially brought that on the entire franchise or 25 members of it in the case of the Canucks, man, that has got to be a tough feeling knowing there's so much you cannot control that could absolutely sewer your season.
That's really what it comes down to. It's completely out of your control. You can be as safe as you possibly want to, but millions of people around the world were safe, being safe.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it's lurking and it's in the room, then who knows what's going to happen. And this isn't about, you know, scare tactics or trying to, you know, push forth fear-mongering around the Maple Leafs.
No.
This is just a reality. I mean, the Marlies quite literally have been shut down here for the foreseeable future, making sure that there isn't a significant COVID issue. And Marlies come and go around the team. Right around the Maple Leafs, and with where we're at right now in the city of Toronto, I mean, we're all acknowledging the reality. This is just simply a reality, and there's only so many games left, and they've been building towards the playoffs. That's the only thing that matters the whole season, even all about the power play and the penalty kill and what happened last night. These are all important details that have to be ironed out, but ultimately it's always been about making sure you're healthy and prepared to go on a run in a month, and they got to get there. They got to get there in the end, and I think at the very least this is probably – I'd be shocked if Shanahan, Dubas, and company didn't send a message to their team like, hey, we have to be really diligent here, like really, really careful. And I'm sure that's applying with every team around the league and certainly playoff teams and the high-end teams that feel like they can really do some damage because
– Oh, yeah.
COVID, if COVID seeps in, that can basically end you. You know, it really can end your season. And – that's just the reality of what we've seen with teams throughout the NHL, the NBA. A lot of times it can be difficult to overcome. And the Raptors are an example of that, right? Like the Raptors got hit really bad, and it does feel like some of those guys, they're still trying to play themselves out of it. You know, they're trying to get back into form. And I don't know if Van Fleet's going to play again the rest of the year. And now Lowry's out with rest tonight. And Gary Trent Jr.'s out. And I wonder if Nick Nurse – I wonder if Masai and Bobby Webster got to Nick Nurse and made him realize we need a dignified tank here. Like, we need to buy in. We have to accept it's over and it's done. And it's in our best interest to make sure we get as close to the top of the board as possible when it comes to the draft lottery. Like, that's what has to happen now. And that wouldn't surprise me if that's the conversation, right?
That's exactly what's happening here. Now, you can't say that's what's happening because we saw what happened a couple of seasons ago when Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, had the nerve to say what everybody knew, which was that his team in that particular moment was better off losing than winning down the stretch, and they were essentially tanking. He said those words out loud, and he got fined about $500,000, and nobody's going to do that. Nobody's going to make that mistake again. Adam Silver sent the message loud and clear that we do not talk about tanking, even if we are clearly tanking.
Right.
And the Raptors, I think you put it well. It's a dignified tank. It's a low key tank. It doesn't look obvious. But if you look at it closely, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, you can pick up on this. Like, they're not playing world-beater teams here, and they're not putting forth their best foot. You know, like, they're giving Malachi Flynn some play, which I like. You know, I liked his game in the fourth quarter last night. Give him an opportunity. You bring in Ken Burch, give him a chance to play some minutes, see what he's got. You know, like, when Gary Trent Jr. is playing and healthy, run him into the ground. He's a young dude. He's a young guy that's going to be a part of your program. Play him 38 minutes, 40 minutes a night. Draw up plays for him. You know, make sure he's got shots going up in the fourth quarter, coming out of timeouts, inbounding plays, whatever it might be. I think that's basically what we're dealing with here. It's about silver linings. It's about circling certain players and making sure that you get the most out of them, but at the end of the day, putting yourself in a better position for the lottery balls to fall. And, like, the Leafs did that with the Matthews draft. Like, it, and Babcock even said it on the record. We all knew it, but Babcock spoke about it recently. I believe he was on some station or a podcast or whatever. And I don't recall them coming out and saying it that bluntly. And again, Dubas won't do it. Shanahan won't do it because they're still employed. But Babcock, of course, is in a different spot. And he said, yeah, we were trying to tank effectively. Mm-hmm. Like, and everyone knew that. But it was a dignified tank. It was a decent start. Then all of a sudden play the guy in net that we know isn't going to stop the puck and just – yeah, if you're injured, you don't have to play tonight. If you're injured, don't play tonight. Don't force it back. And that's what's happening here. Like, Lowry's out for rest. Van Fleet, again, I wouldn't be shocked if Fred didn't play again all year. I really wouldn't be shocked.
He might not.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock
me. Now, the Saints tonight,
all.
He's out. Yeah, he's out. He's serving a suspension tonight, and it's not about the hip tonight. But, you know, your aforementioned Gary Trent Jr., who happens to be playing really well right now, suddenly he's out with an ankle.
Right.
And I don't know if that's real or imagined, but he's out with an ankle and it doesn't matter, right? And the fact that they're resting Lowry, I mean, resting him for what?
Like, yeah, exactly. You kept him at the deadline to go
for it. What are they resting
him for? I thought
that
was the whole argument there.
Yeah. I don't know why they'd be resting him because if they were sincerely attempting to catch the Chicago Bulls for that 10th and final spot in the play-in tournament, which they currently trail by 2 games, and they need to finish ahead of the Bulls because I think the Bulls hold the tiebreaker. If they were really going after the Bulls here, Hayes, Kyle Lowry ain't resting.
No,
no
of
way.
Course not.
You know,
no, you
only have 17 games left here, or 15 games left.
It would also suggest that Kyle is well aware of what's going on because, you know, Lowry is not generally a guy who allows Nick Nurse or Bobby Webster to tell him what he's going to do. Where, like, if Kyle can play and he's prepared to play and he is rested enough to play and he's pursuing something he thinks is attainable, he's playing. So the message has been permeating through certain members of the organization. And obviously Kyle said, yeah, go ahead. Like, I'm fine with some rest tonight. He's probably playing 36 today. You know, like, I'm cool with some rest. And obviously that's a part of the plan. And it's in their best interest. It sucks that it's a reality. But we've gone this far. You might as well close it out, right? You might as well close it out. If you're the Buffalo Sabres, don't start winning games now. Close it out. It's been awful. Finish last. Give yourself a chance at the best pick possible. And I think the Raptors have to be in the same spot. And I think they are. You know, I think Nurse is on board. Webster's on board. Masai's on board. And it's going to be, for the first time in a long time, you know, the draft lottery is going to be an exciting event, right? Like, there was a run there for a while where that was about it. over the course of a calendar year, that was pretty much the most excitement you could get if you're a Raptor fan. What's going to happen when the lottery balls go up? And the one time fall in your place, Andrea Bargnani's the guy who you end up taking first overall, and I don't get the impression like Cade Cunningham is projecting to be a bust or projecting to be anything of the sorts like Andrea Bargnani turned out to be. So the Raps are back in action tonight, taking on San Antonio, and the Spurs are playing for something. You know, they're, I believe, currently in ninth in the West. They're a 500 team. They're fighting to stay in that spot, the top 10, so they could have be a part of the play-in. So they're playing for something tonight. They're favored tonight. And with the Raps putting forth the lineup that they're putting forth, it appears to be a pretty good opportunity for San Antonio to get a win. Speaking of which, Bo Bichette just walked off the Jays with his second home run of the day, I believe. And the Jays take two of three off the Yankees. Yeah, they just walked off in the ninth with Bo Bichette. And that's big. That's 4 of 6 against the Yankees in 2 weeks.
That is huge.
That is huge. Like, that's exactly who you're competing with. The Yankees are not off to a great start. I think that's 2 games under 500 for them. Jays battle back up into 500. So, you know, with everything that's going on with the Jays, where Merriweather goes back on the IL, which is not shocking at all. Like, the fact that you pencil him in, I don't know how many innings you can pencil Julian Merriweather in for, but if it's more than 40, I think you're asking for disappointment. He goes back on the IL. Ross Stripling was a late scratch with forearm stiffness, so TJ Zoik has to start the game. He got lit up a little bit, but ultimately the bats came alive for the second straight night. In the third, three of the last four games, the bats have come alive for the Jays. Tellez had a hit. Kirk finally went deep. He was 0 for 13 before that home run. They're still striking out a lot, but they're putting up some runs. You know, they're putting up some runs, and the arms are what they are. Rio was brilliant last night. He's been great 3 times through the rotation. But they're back to 500. You take 2 or 3 against the Yankees. That's a big win.
That is huge, especially on a day where you got some bad news, more bad news about injuries as it relates to the pitching staff, especially on a day where probably the most alarming bit of news, Hayes, was the word from Charlie Montoya that George Springer, you know, he's not expected back anytime soon, I think, was the phrase. Like, when you're saying the guy you just signed for 6 years and $150 million is not going to be back anytime soon, that's not exactly, you know, the best news to wake up to.
No. No, that's just an open-ended stint on the IL, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's all that is. That means you can't put
a date
on it.
That sounds Freddie Anderson-esque.
Yeah, very much so.
Freddie Anderson-esque.
Yep, very much so. Like, we'll find out when he finds out. He's not even taking the trip. Like, they're wheels up to Kansas City this afternoon. He's not even going to be on the plane. So he's staying in Dunedin, which I guess is not ultimately a surprise. You know he's going to do some simulated games. He's been in the cage a little bit, but it clearly is not that close to Springer being a part of the program. And I think when you look at the top of the order, like Marcus Semien's been fine for them. He's been pretty good for them. But again, striking out a lot. Like, he's struck out a lot. Bichette had 2 bombs today. Bo has struck out a lot. Biggio is really in a hole in terms of his strikeouts, in terms of his confidence at the plate. It just does not appear to be there. So getting Springer back at some point.
Alejandro Kirk finally got a hit. How about that?
Finally got
a
hit.
He had a home run.
Yep.
First hit of the year after going 0 for 13. So that's nice. I mean, because they were hurting at the bottom of the order, right? The bottom of the order has not been great either.
No.
But to your point, Hayes, like, I got a little Yankees fan in my house, an insufferable Yankees fan in my house, and they're hurting bad.
You know, they are.
This is a tough start for the mighty evil empire, which is not expected, right? Like, they expected to be by far and away the best team in the East, and right now they're a little ravaged by injury themselves.
Yep, they are,
and they're not looking particularly steady with the guys who are healthy.
No, and you see, like, Judge played today. He had a home run in the first. He had a couple of hits, but you know it's just a matter of time before Aaron Judge is back in the IL, right? Like, you just know he's not going to consistently. He's not playing 150 games. And
never
Stanton's
does.
Already out. Well, Mayhew was out today. Luke Voit has been out. Like, they
out, yeah.
They got some real injury issues down there, and take advantage. Like, for the Jays to go to take 4 of 6 against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium and 1 down in Dunedin, that is a big start to the year, even though overall they're only 500. Again, I think when everything evens out, the Sox are off to a good start. I think they'll fade. I don't think they're good enough.
Not going to last.
It's not going to last. Baltimore's terrible. I think Tampa is just – they're going to be pesky. They'll be lurking. They'll be around. But I think they're going to take a step back from that 90, 92, 93 win team. I think it's the Yankees and the Jays in the end. So if it comes down to head-to-head, you know, play each other, you know, 18, 19 times, and you're off to a 4-2 start, that's massive. That's a big start. Mm-hmm. And you face Garrett Cole twice already. So
exactly.
That's a big start for them. And Bo Bichette walking off today, he's, you know, watching him, he had that play in the first inning that got reviewed for about 5 minutes. It was just an obnoxious experience between Aaron Boone and the ump. And drives me nuts is that, like, there's clearly some indecision from Boone. If you're the umpire, tell him you're done then. You know, like, the ump goes over him and keeps asking, sorry, Aaron, I just want to clarify. Do you want me to review? Are we reviewing, not reviewing? If the second he doesn't answer you, start the game back up. Like, it's just ridiculous. The power of these managers is absurd.
I agree. Yeah, especially for a sport that, you know, pays all this lip service to wanting to speed up the game, right? Commissioner's office is studying this, and they're studying pitch clocks, and they're talking about all these minor league adjustments they're going to make that they may adapt eventually. That's the easiest one, right? Like, that should be an open and shut case. That's essentially, we look over to you in the dugout, you give me the thumb up or the thumb down, and then we move on.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't get your guy in the back room to get six looks at the replay on his iPad before you decide on this stuff. I'm with you, Hayes. It's
they've been doing that since day one. Like, they've never really adjusted the rule. And I remember when it was implemented a couple of years ago, and Gibbons was as bad as anyone. Like, he'd sit there and be staring at the review with his hand up.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Everyone in the stadium, 50,000 people there, just whenever you're ready, John. Like, whatever's
exactly.
up. You know, you tell me
but
when
you can't
ready.
Blame the manager. Like, if they're letting you do that, then you're going to take as much time as they allow you to get the, you know, to make the best decisions that you can make. But you can't let them do that.
No, you can't.
You
got to
just
the power
be essentially, yeah. Like, yeah. give them, it's got to be like a three, like, it's like, I don't know what the rule is going to be, but you got to define the rule and essentially say it's immediate. When we ask you, you get like a five count to answer, and then we're on with the game.
I think the way around it might be the home plate umpire, by the time he walks over to the dugout, he will have his hands on the top of the dugout. That's when you have to have an answer for him, because he's over there, he's going to touch the top of the dugout, and then he's walking back to home plate, and then the game's going to restart.
On.
And the game's going to go on. Exactly. But Bichette, you know, he just looks like such a baller. You know what I mean? Like, he's got that vibe to him. And the head first slide into second today, where, again, that was what was getting reviewed, and he ends up safe. He's got an Alomar flair to him, you know, playing short. He's got a moxie to him. And for him to hit two bombs today, and his bat is coming alive, and he walks them off against the Yankees, like, it's exactly what they've been waiting for. Is Bichette and Vladdy, Bo hitting the two-hole today. Vladdy was in the three-hole today, combined five hits, a couple of home runs, couple of runs. Like, it's exactly what you're looking for. Now Bichette, he's got an on-base of .358, slugging of .653, so he's up over 1,000 OPS. Vladdy's up over 1,100, I believe, OPS. And that's your team. That's your team.
Yeah.
It's Bichette and Vladdy. Even when Springer comes back, he's just going to join the two of them. Like, if they want to have success 1 through 9, ultimately it's going to be Springer, Bichette, and Vladdy. But really, it's the two young guys that have to – they've got to continue to improve, continue to play well, and their bats are alive, and they're a joy to watch. And they're winning some ball games.
They are a joy to watch. I mean, the way Vladdy's hitting the ball – it's what everybody expected to see from Vladdy Guerrero on a regular basis in the major leagues. And we didn't see it enough last year, right? Like, you'd see the occasional flash, but we've seen it in quantity here. And I don't know if it's just guy's in better shape. What do you know? He's a better player. Or if it's just, hey, another year, you know, another year, you make some mistakes. You kind of figure out, you know, where you can't make mistakes and where you can. And suddenly the ball is coming off your bat like a rocket.
Yep, exactly. And that is precisely what's happening right now. So Nick Foligno will join us. We'll get his take on making the trip up here, his reaction to the deal, what he thinks he brings to the team. And he played some playoff hockey last year in the bubble in Toronto. So how can that help him and the team, considering they've been through it before? So that, more coming up with Nick Foligno. We'll get into the Leaf game last night. Look back again on the Jays walking off the Yankees earlier this afternoon. They're off to Kansas City for four starting tomorrow night. Get to that. The Raptors in action tonight. Some signing news in the NFL we'll tell you about as well. Dave Festruck from the Stars in here. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. I need you to hold on. Heaven is a place now. All right, Nick Foligno is going to call in here in just a moment. He was officially a Leaf the last couple of games, and the Leafs losing on Monday night in Montreal. They lost in overtime last night. That was a beautiful play by Goudreau to end it. But the Leafs.
Man, seriously.
Again, that power play, man. Like, that's what it keeps coming back to. That four-minute power play they had in the third, they have no confidence. None. You can just tell. They go over the boards. They have no belief they're going to score. And he's trying to mix up the personnel a little bit. He had Robertson on at one point, that second line or the second PP unit. He had Robertson. He had Galchenyuk out there. He's tried Jake Muzzin on the point. Like, they're throwing different things at the wall, but nothing is sticking. And ultimately, it's not going to come down to the second unit. It's got to be Matthews, Marner, Tavares. Those are the big boys. They've got to close, and it's just a rally killer right now.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that, you know, you just got to keep going with your best guys. Like, you look at Washington's near the top of the league. They throw Ovi out there like 90% of the time. Edmonton's near the top of the league. They put McDavid and Draisaitl out there in like 90% of the minutes. I think Keefe in the last eight games has only played Matthews like 60% of the minutes on the power play, which to me, I just don't get that. I don't know why you wouldn't want your best scoring threat on the ice for the maximum amount of time possible.
Yeah, I think at some point that's going to happen. But
you do? Yeah, listen, I don't know.
I think so. Something's got to give. Yeah. Like, it is what it is. They cannot score on the power play at this point, and it's something you got to work out. You got to have a gun and come playoff time. But 5-on-5, they score, they're, what, top three in the league, 5-on-5 goals? So it hasn't ultimately been a big concern for them in terms of wins and losses prior to the past couple of nights. But I guess we're a week away from seeing Nick Foligno get in the lineup, and I believe he's made his way up to Toronto. I think he drove up, and he's living that quarantine lifestyle. And here he is, one of the newest members of the Maple Leafs. There have been a few new members over the last couple of days. Here is Nick Foligno. How you doing, Nick?
Very well. How you guys doing?
We're doing okay. How's that quarantine lifestyle treating you?
Oh, it's day one, and I've already been bored, so I'm nervous about a couple more days here. But I can't complain. It's all good. It's all for the right reason.
Yeah. Is it an opportunity for Sheldon Keefe to, you know, bury you with game tape and pick your brain on what you see and what you want to do? I mean, what kind of instructions have the Leafs given you for the upcoming 6 days?
Yeah, I think they were getting through the back-to-back, and then he said he was going to get a hold of me with some game tape and some film of things. So I'm sure I'll be buried in it. And but I've been watching the past few games, and you know, I'm getting excited. Obviously, I'm missing hockey right now. I feel like I'm out of a routine. So I'll be probably happy for the first time in my life to watch game tape. So it'll be fun.
So, Nick, you're obviously an Ontario guy at heart, you know, spending your off seasons in Sudbury. But what's gone through your mind as you've kind of gotten acquainted with Toronto? It's not the same Toronto right now, obviously, from a hotel room. But as you're sort of sitting here in Toronto where your dad played, and I know you talked in your first media availability about your memories of your dad playing as a Leaf in that magical 1993 run, what goes through your mind?
You know, I didn't realize my own reaction and how excited I would be. You know, I think just, you know, obviously my dad played and I was young, but I think just knowing the passion of the fans and remembering that run that they went on and kind of envisioning if we can get something like that rolling, how amazing that would be. You know, my dad still talks about it. So obviously it resonated with him and how incredible and electrifying the city was. So to be able to kind of have a chance to be a part of that and join this team who, you know, has just done such a great job, obviously, this season, I'm just thrilled for the opportunity. I really am. I'm excited to come in and help where I can, you know, and already are an impressive team and learn from these guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, everyone's talking about, you know, me coming in and leadership aspect, but there's a lot of leaders in that room, and I always love learning from other guys and how they go about it. And so I'm just as excited about, you know, offering up some stuff, but also learning and sitting back and you know, admiring some of the guys in that room that have done it for a lot longer, and it's only going to make me a better player in person.
We're chatting with Nick Foligno. In terms of what you will bring to the table, I think a lot of Leaf fans are very familiar with your game and have seen you play many times, including last year in the bubble, obviously, when Columbus took on the Leafs in that five-game series. But what do you picture as an ideal role for you that would offer up the most production and the most help for the team? Why do you think, you know, Dubas would reach out and say, I got to have Nick Foligno, and here's why, because this is what he's going to bring?
Well, I think they want me in Matthews' spot, first off.
That could help. Could help the power play right now. You never know.
No, I think, you know, I think it's going to be just wherever's needed. You know, I don't really think we've had a real conversation about how it's going to fit, because one thing I've learned in this league is nothing ever goes according to plan. And you can plan it out in a million different ways in your head, but until a guy gets in there, until a guy really finds his role, and whatever role that may be, obviously I'm confident about my abilities and what I can bring, but, you know, whatever the team needs, that's always been my motto wherever I play. You know, I played for Torts, and I've moved up and down and played every position but goalie, it felt like. But that's, you know, I like that. I like that challenge. So that, to me, is what I hope to bring, is wherever, you know, coach needs me or the team needs me, then I'm going to provide that. And you know, I feel confident in that. But also, I'm not going to go in there thinking I got to be this or that. I'm just going to go in there and do what I do. And hopefully, you know, it clicks with the team, which I think it will, because it's already a great team over there. And they, you know, they seem like unbelievable guys, especially the ones I know. And I'm really looking forward to being a part of that locker room.
Hey, Nick, you know, you talked about how, you know, your dad had the trademark jump when he scored goals for the Maple Leafs and the other teams he played for. And you did that on your first goal. Your brother did that on his first NHL goal. But you said you draw the line at bringing back the trademark salad bowl helmet that your dad made famous. did you ever wear that old Northland bucket?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've put it on a few times. And I got to admit, it is the most comfortable helmet I've ever worn. but it is the most hideous helmet I've ever seen. So I don't know how my dad pulled it off. No wonder he had to fight so much, I think, in his career. But yeah, it's we still use it to strain the pasta, I was saying, in the sink at the house. So
that's great.
It's definitely it's up in his office, I think, the last I saw it. And it's so cool how many people, and since, you know, being traded, have resonated with that. You know, they're like, oh, we need you to bring back the helmet. And I just laugh at how that's still, you know, one of the things they remember my dad by. And, you know, it's definitely his trademark. So that's why, that's him. You know, we were cheering him on and doing the jump and all that as kids, but that was his thing. And I think he's really proud that we obviously paid respect to him in our first goals. And but I don't know about the helmet. I don't think I can bring that back.
No, I don't blame you for that. Although it's got character, man. I'll say that. Like, that, Foligno, that is your dad's bucket. Like, no one else can wear it. No one else can rock it. He owns it, and he's left his mark on the game. There's something to say about that.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I know Stan Mikita, good. I think, was the other guy that wore it. And I still hear my dad's name more than him, which is impressive for how good Stan Mikita was. So,
absolutely.
Pretty funny.
With Nick Foligno, you've obviously, like you mentioned, you've made your mark on the National Hockey League. You've played 950 games, so you're creeping up on that 1,000-game mark, and that's what Milan Lucic did last night, and Lucic got into a tilt, and it was a pretty good one with Sabourin. Could you see, what do you, I know we're putting the cart way before the horse, but if you were to hit 1,000, would you feel like I got to fight, I got to score, I have to do something tonight because I'm playing 1,000 tonight?
You got to do something, you know, it's 1,000 game. You want to remember it. So, obviously scoring would be the ideal one. But, I saw that for Lucic, which is impressive. You know, I think he was in my draft class. So starting to see those guys hitting that number, you know, it just makes you realize how far you've come, and it's an amazing honor. You know, I remember my dad doing it and just being so impressed with that and how big a deal it really is. And to be close to it, I mean, it's obviously, it'd be a great, you know, thing to put into my feather in the cap, so to speak. And but I haven't thought about it too much. I got, you know, some time before then, and I said I'd like to have about 1,000 playoff games. That would be a way better testament. But it'll be pretty special, and neat to see some guys, like I said, from my draft class start to hit that number. And you know, it's been an amazing ride.
What did you make of the Flames went, the entire team went without helmets in the warm-up, I'm assuming in a tribute to Lucic for his 1,000th game. Where do you stand on that one? Are you a helmet-off guy?
I was until I started losing all my hair. And then, so I'm glad I got it in out of my system when I was young. Now I shaved my head since, so I could probably bring it back and wouldn't look too silly. I would love, we had a team rule in Columbus. You couldn't wear a helmet, and all the guys thought it was because I made the rule secretly. So I wouldn't have to show my head, but it would be, it'd be nice to go no helmet again. I'll see how I feel. If that's an opportunity in Toronto, I don't know what the rule is, but I might throw it out there one time.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of grizzled vets, like you mentioned, on this team. I mean, you started your career, Jason Spezza was on that Ottawa team your first few years there, and Spezza's still in town. And then you would think, you know, Spezza will be 38 this year, that he would be the grizzled vet of grizzled vets, but he's basically a child compared to Thornton. I mean, Jumbo's still kicking around with a beard, and I got to believe Jumbo can basically do whatever he wants. I can't picture Sheldon Keefe telling him, you have to wear a helmet in warm-up. Like, what do you think that experience would be like, getting in the room and seeing guys like Thornton and Spezza and guys that are older than you still kicking around and playing prominent roles here?
I told that to Spezza already. I'm just so excited not to be the oldest guy on the team anymore. I'm just
right.
A young kid. That's probably why I feel so rejuvenated, with just those guys around. But I'm really excited to, you know, it's been a while since I've honestly played with an older player, to be honest. It's kind of crazy to say, but we've had such a young team in Columbus. You know, Brandon Dubinsky was the last guy and he was just a year older than me. So, you know, I think I'm excited about, you know, it's always the learning part of it, right, for me. And I think that's when you feel like you stop learning, I think that's when you got to get out of the game. That's probably why you see Joe and the way he is. He just looks like he's having a blast out there, you know, and he's probably having so much fun learning from Marner and Matthews and Nylander and Tavares. And, you know, he just looks like a guy that soaks it all in. So that's what I look forward to doing, when learning from him, learning from Jason again, being around those guys, and how are they able to stay in the game? I'm going to learn that, because, I mean, I don't want to end anytime soon. So what is it that they're doing? You know, so it's exciting for me just to have those guys in the room and learn off them. And I'm really looking forward to that.
With
hey, Nick. Sorry,
let me just stop in here because I want to ask you about, you know, learning experiences based on what you've been saying here. And you played a playoff game. You played multiple playoff series in Toronto last summer without fans, and that's going to be the case again this year. The fans are not on the verge of stepping back into the building. It doesn't appear as if it's going to happen anytime soon. So how can you learn from that experience? What did you learn from that experience? And I'm sure the rest of the team, the Leafs anyway, can learn from that experience that you can apply this year, because it's going to be essentially a carbon copy. You're going to be playing in an empty building for at least the first two rounds.
Yeah. Well, I think I learned that you have to create your own energy. You know, how you play the game a lot of times, you know, catapults you into the game and what you provide. And, you know, I can be one of those guys. I learned how important that was during the bubble. Even early on this year, we had such a young team that didn't quite understand that in Columbus. And when we had no fans, it really affected us. And, you know, it's amazing the teams that can figure out how to play the right way and give yourself energy and allow you to, your game to get going. A lot of times you're the one that has success because of just, you know, your bench comes to life, and your bench is so important for everyone to feel like they're part of the game and, you know, the energy that you get off of that. So that's something that I noticed, and I'll make sure, you know, I'm kind of going backwards in a weird way. We've had fans in the States for a little while now, so it'll be weird for me to kind of get back into that environment. But, you know, I just have, thank God I have that bubble experience, and even earlier on, that I can remind myself of how important that energy is, the positive talk, the things you're doing on the ice to give yourselves a chance to really come together as a group. And, you know, I think that's obviously, you know, a testament to the Toronto team already. I mean, look what they've been able to accomplish this year. They seem like such a close-knit group and play with a ton of energy and excitement. So I'm just looking forward to adding to that and making sure that that's something I focus on when I get back.
Hey, Nick, I know you talked about how, you know, it meant so much for you to watch your dad play in the NHL in Toronto. You tweeted out as you were leaving Columbus, you know, a nice picture of your three kids. You called them your greatest cheerleaders. I mean, what's that like to leave them behind? And I was just curious about, like, is this a COVID-related decision, or is it a school-related decision, or why did you guys kind of come to the family staying in Columbus instead of Toronto?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both, unfortunately. I mean, just the reality of the situation right now in Ontario, where everything's locked down, and I didn't want to put my family in an experience when they really are able to kind of go about their own life right now with school and activities that are kind of open up in Columbus, and also some familiarity for my kids. You know, as hard as it is, I think they realize they're old enough to know, you know, why I'm leaving, what I'm going to try to do. And I think, you know, having that conversation with them, it felt right to go and focus on this and have them continue on, and, you know, not have them feel like they're, burdened or not able to do the things. Cause I mean, three kids and, you know, my wife, I think I was saying to her, I'm sure she's going to be losing it on me at some point here once I'm gone. But I think just the understanding of how strong she is for me and knowing the kind of woman she is, that she can hold down the fort. And I think it's given me the strength to decide that this is probably the best bet. You know, it's all, I'm going in here to do a job. And I think they respect that and know how special this opportunity is for me. So as much as it's probably going to hurt me more because, you know, my family is a lot of the reason why I play the game. You know, outside of hockey, that's all I think about. So that'll be probably the hardest thing on me, but I know they'll be busy and probably won't even think about me too much. but I know they're excited for me, and that's all that matters. And, you know, like I said, going back to it, this is an opportunity for me to go and realize my dream of trying to win a Stanley Cup. And we just felt like it was the right move. And I was saying before, you know, this talk about sacrifice you have to make, and as hard as it is to leave your family, I think putting into perspective of what's really going on in the world and all the sacrifices that people are making that are really making a difference in the world, you know, our doctors, our frontline workers, this isn't sacrifice. This is, you know, I'm going to play a game. I'm going to, you know, realize my dream, and these people are fighting life or death every day. So when you put that into perspective, I think it makes an easier decision, and I'll have my kids cheering me on from afar.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well put with Nick Foligno. We'll get you out of here on one more question about your kids, because you got three of them. You play in the NHL. Your brother plays in the NHL. Your dad played in the NHL. So how does the fandom work out with the kids? Because I got to think you're pushing for one team. Your dad's probably been pushing for a team, if not multiple teams. Marcus, the same thing. Does everyone just follow you in the house? Or are they a fan of their uncle, their grandpa's teams? How does that work out?
My uncle, we call him Uncle Moose. Marcus is Moose. He's got a nickname. I named him that because when he was a kid, he was very uncoordinated. He looked like a baby moose. So it stuck with him ever since. So the kids call him Uncle Moose, and he pulled a fast one on us this year, and he actually sent my kids a bunch of Minnesota Wild hockey gear. My son was playing hockey for the first time this year. He's 5 years old. And so he got his name on his gloves with the Minnesota Wild colors, and so he won up me pretty good, and I'd say they're probably more Uncle Moose fans than Dad fans, just because he got them some awesome gear. So I'll have to get them back one day on that. But I think they just love the fact that you know, their uncle and dad play in the league. Their Nono is his name. Grandpa is Nono in Italian, and he played. And I love that we just get to teach the kids the passion of the game. And I think that's been so fun. It was taught by my dad to Marcus and I, and to be able to pass it on to our kids now is just so neat. So I think they're just hockey fans in general. And now I'm trying to teach them about Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. And so they're getting a pretty good schooling right now in the hockey world. And I think they're loving every minute of it.
Yep, that's going to go a long way for sure. Well, welcome to town. We can't wait to see you play and play for the Maple Leafs, obviously. And good luck with quarantine. And we'll do this again down the road. Thank you for this.
Thank you, guys.
You got it. You got it. There he is, Nick Foligno, one of the newest Maple Leafs. And we had him on the show in August, right before the Leafs played Columbus. And I remember getting off the phone with him saying, that's one of the best interviews in the National Hockey League right there.
Yes.
And I think that was not a hot take. That was a room temperature appropriate take, because he just followed it up. He's an exceptional interview. Awesome to have him on.
He really is.
Yeah, he's a guy. He's a guy. I'll bet you could speak to this, Dave. He's a guy you wish the rooms were open. You'd go sit beside him and talk to him for 15 minutes. He would write story after story about the Felinos, the connection with his dad. It really is just one more example of how COVID has affected everything, including this experience for a guy like Nick Foligno, who, you imagine him scoring, you know, like if he was playing, making his debut at Scotiabank on a Saturday night, scores wearing number 71, jumps in the air, the place would go nuts. Absolutely crazy. And
yeah,
it's just not going to
exactly
happen. But
no, the guy's, he's been raised right, and you know, you can tell his dad was a super down to earth guy when he played. I never covered him. I'm not that old, Hayes, but
right.
But I know one of my old colleagues, Paul Hunter, was telling a story on Twitter the other day about how there was a practice, the Leafs used to practice up at St. Mike's Arena. And they used to take a bus there, obviously, and they would dress at the gardens, go to the arena and in their full gear, jump on the ice, and then take the bus back and undress back at the gardens. And Foligno came out of practice one day, and he goes to Paul Hunter, "Hey, I'm in a bit of a hurry. You got a car here? Could you give me a ride back to the gardens?" And so he jumps in, you know, this reporter's Ford Tempo or whatever it was, in his full hockey gear. And, of course, you know, chats it up and is just the greatest guy in the world. And that's just how it was back then. Could you imagine, like, Austin Matthews or Mitch Marner or Willie Nylander
right.
doing
with
something
Masters,
like that?
Trying to get back down to Scotiabank or Jonas
exactly.
or whatever. No, I don't think it's going to happen. But
no one's jumping in Jonas's Honda Fit, right?
No.
Like, it's just not happening.
You know, I don't.
It
full gear, Matthews, Marner, Kristen Chilton cruising around. I don't see it. I don't think it's going to happen.
No. Different world, different era.
Definitely a different era. But, yeah, Mike Foligno played 1,018 games. Nick Foligno's at 950, and Nick's going to get there. I mean, I think the understanding is, or the belief is, to play this out, probably go back to Columbus, you know, and he's only 33. He's got a few years left in the tank for sure. Interesting what he said, too, about how young Columbus has been, that he's looking forward to getting here and having older players around where you know, you look at this Maple Leaf team where Spezza's older, Thornton is older, Jake Muzzin would be around the same age, and there's a bunch of guys who are kind of in their 30s. Muzzin's 31, Simmons is 32, about the same age. Like, there's a number of guys. Freddie Anderson's 30, Hutchinson, if he's around, 30. Like, you get a few guys who are, even Tavares is 29, but he's an old 29. He's been in the league for a long time.
He has.
So,
it's amazing how it's shifted, right? Like in the last couple of years here, they've gone from being this young up and coming team to a different kind of team that still has Matthews and Marner are still 23 years old. They're not old guys, but you know, if you look at, you know, some of the analytics guys will tell you guys peak earlier than you think in this league, right? You know, it's not always. Sometimes you don't peak when you're 20. Sometimes you peak when you're 23, 24 in this league, given the wear and tear that hockey can exact on you. So, yeah, the time is now, man. And Nick Foligno sounds like he's excited as anybody is to be a big part of it.
That gets you jacked up to see him play, for sure. I think he's going to fit in well. He seems like, you know, salt of the earth type of player and a guy that will move around. And I think, again, I wanted to ask him that because I'm sure Keefe is going to reach out. They'll probably talk a lot. And he'll say, look at this, watch that, have an idea of where we're going. And then once he gets out, it's probably going to take him a few days to gear back up. And it might take him a week or two, really. Like, it might, because if you have to sit in your hotel room, I'm sure they've got him a bike in there. He's got weights. I'm sure he's working out. But it's not the same as skating.
It's not the same.
It's not even close to it. And, listen, that's what comes with the territory. And he laid it out perfectly. He said it's not really a sacrifice. I'm getting to play hockey. This is something I want to do. He accepted that this comes with the territory. But – It's going to be an adjustment for him, for sure. But we always appreciate Nick Foligno taking time. Again, great interview, and I think a really quality addition to the team. I'm looking forward to seeing how it fits and where they decide to take it. We'll get back into the Leafs with Ray. Ray Ferraro will join us in about 20 minutes. We'll spin the wheel of misfortune, see what we're playing at 5:30. Darren Dreger still to come. Steve Phillips as well. On the Jays walking off the Yankees, they take 2 of 3. They're off to Kansas City for 4 starting tomorrow night. We'll start teeing that up as well with Steve. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. With Dave Vestrak of the Toronto Star. So I hit the range earlier this afternoon, or late morning. I had some things to do around the house this morning, and then it was such a beautiful day, and said, I got to get out and hit some balls. So I went to the range. There's one right around the corner from me. It's packed. I've been there 3 or 4 times in the last few weeks, ever since it opened. It is almost impossible to find a spot on the range. There's so many people
it's
out
crazy.
There. It's crazy. Which is what you would expect. There's very few things you could do. It's a beautiful day. You get outside, hack around. So I find a spot, and I'm out there. I'm hitting some balls. I've been out there for about 5-10 minutes, and these two younger guys show up, probably early 20s. And I didn't think anything of it. They line up. They've got a bucket of balls that they're going to share, and they've got actually two spots, one on one side, one on the other. One guy's a righty, one guy's a lefty. And so they take a couple of wedges out, hit a couple of wedges, take a couple 8-irons out, hit a couple 8-irons. Then they pull the driver out, and one guy goes first. Bryson DeChambeau range routine.
No.
Like huffing and puffing, and his buddies throwing him the ball to tee it up like what Bryson was doing at the Masters.
No.
I was watching this. I'm like, tell me these guys actually are doing this right now. I have never been more embarrassed in my life for other human beings.
Yes.
And like huffing and puffing, like trying to be Bryson. And hitting the ball 215 off the tee.
That's the kicker.
crazy.
215, not 215. 415.
No, it wasn't going 415. Yeah. They weren't up over 200 miles an hour on swing speed. It was just completely for show. And them trying to do it to, I don't know, what? What are they trying to achieve at the range off a mat with garbage range balls? It was unbelievable what I witnessed earlier today.
I cannot believe that there are people out there doing that. But isn't it amazing, like, the power of those images, man, on social media? Like, the kids see them. And these guys didn't sound like kids, mind you.
No.
But they're younger guys, I guess.
Yeah, early
and
20s.
Just like, I got to try that.
Probably think that they hit the ball further than they do. Because every golfer does, right? Everyone thinks, I could hit about 270. Well, you average about 232 off the tee. Like, not really, but okay. You hit that one really good drive 3 weeks ago, downhill, wind behind you. Okay, good for you. But DeChambeau, I guess he's having an effect on people, man. He's an influencer, you know, because it's showing up at ranges in, you know, suburbs of Toronto. It's outrageous. I've seen some of the goofiest stuff ever at the range. I've been there 3 or 4 times. It's just people are losing their minds. Losing their minds.
It's nuts, man.
Yeah.
I got a million range stories. It's just the range is like a jungle right now.
It really is. There should be anthropologists just walking around studying people. It's crazy.
Yeah, seriously.
Ray Ferraro coming up. We'll spin the wheel of misfortune at 5:30. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.